send her abilities gushing forth in blasts far beyond what her experience should warrant, Mr. Numbers said.
I don't know about that, Mr. Transport retorted. What is experience if not the accumulation of scars and lessons that allow us to use our mind, bodies, and powers more effectively?
I'm not getting into a philosophy or semantics argument with you. I'm just laying the facts out on the table. You and I recommended a girl whose experience as a Poward has likely made her one of the strongest, if not the strongest, supers of her generation, Mr. Numbers said, with as much control as he had available at hand. Opening his water, he retook his seat and began looking through the files on his side of the table.
You're worrying too much, Mr. Transport said. The only reason the Dean even looked twice at her is because he knew about her past, which is why I lobbied not to divulge that information to staff. Aside from that, we both know she isn't the strongest. You watched the combat tapes with me and read the files.
True, Mr. Numbers agreed. I dare say the only reason this hasn't fallen down on our heads is because, compared to that boy, even Mary would have one hell of a fight.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if she is near the top. Hell, Roy was fifth and Vince was eighth, so she has company. The only thing that cannot happen is Mary becoming the undisputed strongest in her grade. It would be troublesome with any of them, really, but with her, we would have to own up to the oversight, Mr. Transport said.
Who would have ever thought spending all those years without any control would actually help her so much? Mr. Numbers asked, with no expectation of an answer.
It's my fault, Mr. Transport said. I handle research. If I had only looked into telepathic training methods, I might have discovered this.
It's no one's fault. Or it's both of ours' fault. Neither of us goes down alone, and you know that,
Mr. Numbers corrected immediately.
Besides which, I think it might be a good thing in the long run.
How do you mean? Mr. Transport asked.
What would be worse to deal with? A tremendously powerful telepath who can control her abilities, or one that has no say whatsoever in what she does? Mr. Numbers asked.
Mr. Transport was silent for a few moments, imagining each encounter realistically rather than snapping off the obvious acceptable answer. There were several things about Mr. Transport that Mr. Numbers didn't always care for, but his tendency to take each question posed to him with seriousness and analysis was not one of them.
Well, Mr. Transport said at last, I think that would depend on the context of dealing with them. If they are on our side, then control is preferable. However, if they've gone rogue, then I'd rather have them lacking any real influence on what their power does.
A good answer, Mr. Numbers said honestly. So that means we should worry less about precisely where we might have gone wrong, and focus on ensuring that Mary Smith and every other subject we recommended into the program stays on the straight and narrow path. That's the best way we demonstrate the sound judgment of our selections.
Very good plan, Mr. Transport commented. But that leaves us with the meat of the matter. How exactly do we do that?
23. Logically speaking, there had to be a part of Alice that didn't hurt. She comprehended that in a rational, understanding of biology sort of way. Unfortunately, all that knowledge couldn't convince her body to find a position that didn't provoke spasms of soreness coursing through her nerves. Never in her life did she suspect she would ever look back on her one-on-one sessions with her personal trainer as such a light, peaceful workout. Yet, here she was. Here, in this case,
was sprawled out on the sofa in the communal area, watching TV and trying desperately to get comfortable. She would have much preferred to be in her own room, or even in just the girls' lobby, but returning home had led to the discovery that the cable had only been hooked up to the common room so far. The other rooms only had access to basic channels, and subpar entertainment wasn't going to do much to take her mind off of what today's workout had done to her. Unfortunately, the others seemed to have had the same idea, as they were slumped over and groaning in the chairs and love seats scattered throughout the room. Everyone was there except Herschel, who had excused himself a few minutes ago to change. Alice couldn't really imagine he owned more comfortable clothing than the sweatpants and Star Wars t-shirt he had been wearing, but she supposed anything was possible. The rest of them were watching a sitcom, shifting occasionally, and presumably trying not to think about how they had an entire week of this starting on Monday. Even Mary's presence didn't take the top spot of worry in Alice's mind for the moment. The only thing the telepath was going to pick up from her was, "Ow. Ouch. Ugh. Why did I sign up for this?" Alice's forced focus on the flat screen was interrupted by a bottle of water bumping gently against her head. "What the hell?" Alice exclaimed. She relaxed as she noticed the bottle was not alone. It seemed to have come with an assortment of friends who were hovering a few inches from the faces of Vince and Nick. Mary was already sipping on hers. Alice may have been weary, but she wasn't so tired she couldn't put this simple puzzle together.
"Oh, thank you for the water, Mary," Alice said as she took the bottle and twisted off the cap.
"No trouble,"
Mary replied honestly. It wasn't as though the bottles were heavy or hard to maneuver. The four weary, would-be warriors sat in suffering silence after that, the only punctuation, aside from groans and television banter, being the occasional sip from a bottle of water.
"Well, well, you ladies sure can't handle your exercise,"
said a deep voice from the side of the room. Standing in the doorway to the boys' side, wearing a different shirt and jeans, but sporting the same cowboy hat, stood the man from the karaoke platform last night. For a moment, Alice thought she had certainly slipped off to sleep in her fugue of pain, and gladly welcomed the dream that was beginning. The delusion was quickly shattered by Vince.
"Who are you, and how did you get in here?"
Vince cried, pulling himself halfway from his chair. It would have been a grander gesture if he had made it all the way out, but given his current physical condition, it was still somewhat impressive.
"Now come on, Vince. Is that any way to talk to the man whose mess you cleaned up this morning?"
the tall man asked, waltzing over to the chair Herschel had been sitting in and plopping down forcefully. Alice had no idea what he was talking about, but now that she knew it wasn't a dream, she was beginning to feel concern gnaw at her. She had been privy to the designs of this place. There should be no way he could have come in through the boys' side. The only entrance was the front one. So how had this cowboy broken into their home?
"Roy?" Vince asked skeptically.
"Sure as shit in an outhouse," Roy replied. "Pleasure to finally meet you in the flesh."
Roy leaned over from his chair and grasped Vince's hand, giving it a hearty shake.
"Hey, that's cool that you guys know each other," Nick said. "Maybe now you can explain why there's a stranger sitting in our home? Who else thinks that would be awesome? Just me? Come on, show of hands, people."
Nick threw up his own hand, and Mary followed suit. Vince began awkwardly. "This is Roy. He's Herschel. Kind of."
"How can he be Herschel?" Alice asked incredulously.
Well, you see, my beautiful blonde cohabitant, I'm the form the fatty turns into when he can't take it anymore, Roy explained. Not only does he get stronger, faster, leaner, and all around sexier, but he also gets a pair of testicles and a shot of social sense.
Wait, when Herschel said he was going to change earlier...
Alice let her thought die out as she put the pieces together.
Tubbo was hurting, and he doesn't cope so well with pain, especially from a workout. So he went to his room and invited me to handle things. I don't suffer from shit like pain or fatigue, Roy said, as he flashed a set of pearly white teeth around the room.
Stop calling him fat, Vince said. It isn't nice. Herschel is our friend, and he's just a little out of shape.
An action figure in the microwave is a little out of shape, Roy said. Herschel is a doughy chicken shit. Besides, I can talk all the trash I damn well please. I am Herschel, after all.
No, you aren't, Vince disagreed. Herschel might be awkward, but at least he has always been kind to everyone. You're not.
It might not be a fun truth, but that doesn't make it not real. Just deal with it, freak hair. Me and Husky are the same person, Roy said.
No, you're not, Vince said, his voice rising noticeably.
Yes, I am, Roy reinforced.
Yes, he is, Mary said softly.
Both of the battling boys looked at her. She was sitting in her chair, petting No on his head, and not meeting either of their eyes. There was something about her that seemed sad. Just a few moments ago, she had been the same old Mary, with the wild hair and the unreadable eyes. But now, in the time that Roy had come in the room, it was like some of the light had left her somehow. It was impossible to put a finger on what was different, but it was equally impossible to ignore the change.
Well, Roy said after a pause, if the telepath agrees with me, it must be true. I'll see you girls later on.
Roy's eyes stared right at Vince and Nick, making certain they knew he wasn't just referring to the actual women. Where are you going? Vince asked, an undisguised tint of suspicion in his voice.
Whiskey Shallows, Roy replied. It's a popular club around here. I told a few of the admirers I met last night that I'd stop by. You girls are welcome to come, if you think you can peel yourselves out of your chairs.
With that, Roy tipped his hat to Mary and Alice, and then strode out the front door.
Wasn't he just a ray of sunshine? Nick quipped.
Alice chuckled politely, but Mary just stayed quiet, while Vince seemed to be rolling something around in his head. Slowly, but forcefully, Vince uprooted himself from his sitting position and got on his feet.
I'm going with him, Vince said simply.
The word why comes to mind, Nick said. Are you in the mood for more narcissism and ego?
Not even remotely, Vince replied. But I was there this morning when Herschel had to try and explain himself out of the situation Roy had left him in. The worst part of it wasn't watching him run or panic or take that girl's insults and accusations in stride. It was how resigned he was to it. Like he had done this countless times before and expected to be doing it for a long time after.
What do you think you can do? Alice asked.
Not sure, Vince replied. Maybe I can at least keep tabs on Roy and help Herschel with whatever mess he wakes up in.
I'm sure Herschel is used to dealing with these things alone, Alice said, a trace of bitterness clinging to her words.
I'm sure he is. But Herschel doesn't have to be alone anymore. I want to go show him that, Vince said.
Very noble, Nick said sarcastically. I expect you'll expect us to rally to your words and leap up to join the cause?
No. I expect you all to do what you need to do. I'm sure some of you need to rest. I need to do this, Vince countered. I'm changing clothes and leaving in 20 minutes. If you want to come, then come. If not, then I'll see you in the morning. It was an idiotic idea. They were all sore and tired, and it was evident that Vince was on a fool's errand. Roy was 3 ranks higher, so even if Vince wanted to, he wouldn't be able to do anything to stop him. There was literally no point to anything that silver-haired moron was doing. So why did Alice care? 24.
Well, Nick said, at a volume higher than normal, this seems like a lovely, cultured establishment.
Vince, Alice, and Nick all stood in the entryway of Whiskey Shallows, a club with a country theme and a powerfully pumping stereo system. It had taken Vince a few minutes to look up the address, and he cursed himself for having wasted the time. They could have found their way using the tacky neon glow and the ridiculously loud music, both of which were detectable from blocks away. He was happy Nick and Alice had decided to join him, though. Nick, he'd been only moderately surprised by. After all, his sandy-haired friend did seem to enjoy getting out of the dorm at any chance presented. Alice, on the other hand, had been a huge surprise when she emerged from her room in a fashionable top and tailored blue jeans. It had been a very fortunate surprise, though, because, in the haste of his bravado, Vince had utterly forgotten that he didn't own a car. Neither did Nick, since before the procedure they'd had a tendency to blow up around him, so it fell on Alice to cram the two boys into her BMW and chauffeur them to the club. Vince had been very tempted to ask why she was tagging along, but had decided against it. It wasn't as though she had been unfriendly at all. He had merely thought she would see herself above coming to a place like this. It was his own fault for making such assumptions about her, simply because she projected a confident and put-together aura. As the out-of-place trio maneuvered through the robust crowd, Vince was surprised by how many people his age seemed to be in attendance. Most of them had large, black X's on their hands like he and his friends, so they were old enough to get in, but too young to drink. He looked around more and realized that none of the faces looked familiar. It made more sense, though. Only the supers would be reeling after today's workout. The rest of the college would be out celebrating their return to school and the first Friday of the year. This place was close to Lander, so even if the younger students couldn't drink, it was still a good place to get off campus and meet new people. Vince passed a pair of girls in a corner taking shots behind a potted plant while trying to keep their hands out of sight, and reevaluated the possible reasons the underage students would come. Vince was tempted to yell at Nick and Alice to split up and cover more ground looking for Roy, but he wasn't confident he would hear or feel the cell phone in his pocket with all the bass and noise surrounding them. That was a shame, because he could have used a way to cover more ground. The club was huge, with 3 bars on the first floor and 2 more on the second. An enormous dance floor sat a few inches higher on the first floor, making sure everyone could have a good view of the people shaking their stuff. It seemed oddly like a way to window shop to Vince. After a moment, he realized that's exactly what it was.
"I think we're doing this wrong!"
Alice yelled, getting Vince and Nick's attention and dragging them near a set of restrooms where things were marginally quieter.
"How so?" Vince asked.
"We're looking for one person in a giant club. That could take forever. We should be looking for a group instead."
Alice explained.
"Why a group? All we want is Roy," Vince pointed out.
"Yes, but Roy said he was meeting people here,"
Alice explained.
"If he was telling the truth," Vince said. "Yeah, but if we're going to question his truthfulness, then we have to ask ourselves if we're even at the right club.
Why don't we just work under the assumption he was honest for now? Nick said.
Right. So if Roy is meeting people, then we need to look for a cluster of people. Probably ones that are our age if he met them last night on campus,
Alice said. Cluster of people our age, Vince agreed. He turned his head back toward the club and tried to count how many clusters of people he saw in the college-aged range. Once he passed 30, he turned back around to Alice.
I don't suppose there's anything else that would narrow it down?
It'll be almost, if not completely, made up of girls, Alice replied.
How do you know that? Nick asked.
I saw him last night. Trust me, that boy only has one thing on his mind and definitely isn't just sitting on a stool all night,
Alice said. Gotcha, Vince said quickly, closing off the subject. Okay, let's scout for groups of girls our age with a cowboy hat poking out from the middle.
You know, I'm a little surprised there's such a massive country bar out here, Nick said, as they started back into the main area of the club.
There's everything around Lander. There's a gay club, a techno club, a dance club, and a bunch of bars, Alice said. Lander is a pretty huge school, and people come from all over America, so local business owners found a niche for just about every kind of way to drink and meet new copulation partners.
Nick laughed loudly.
I've never heard picking up bar skanks put in such a classy way.
It's a gift, Alice replied.
Speaking of gifts, I think we just got handed one, Vince said, pointing to the dance floor.
Standing a few yards away from them, dancing simultaneously with three girls, was Roy. He was moving smoothly to the beat while holding a drink in his left hand. Periodically, he would take sips, usually while executing spin maneuvers. Not one drop of the brown liquid was spilled. In fact, none of it looked like it dared summon up the nerve to even approach the rim of the glass, unless, of course, it was making a direct beeline for Roy's mouth. Vince noticed Roy's hands were stamped and wondered how he managed to pull that off. It wasn't really relevant, so he pushed the thought aside. What mattered now was keeping an eye on Roy and, if possible, dissuading him from abandoning Herschel in an awkward situation. If Roy wasn't willing to play along, at least Vince might be able to explain things to the girl so she didn't freak out whenever Roy changed back. He didn't have much of a plan, but then Vince had never been great at strategy. He set a goal, and he found a way. That style had always worked out before, so he set his shoulders and prepared to shadow Roy for the rest of the night. That plan was almost immediately interrupted by a familiar voice behind him.
Hello again, Sucker Punch.
25. Vince turned around and found himself face to face with his former opponent.
Michael, right? Vince asked.
Damn right, Michael replied.
Michael was a touch out of place wardrobe-wise, having chosen to wear only a black tank top that drew attention to the impressive arms and shoulders his practice at boxing had wrought him. Combined with the steel-toed boots on his feet and the unpleasant sneer on his face, it made for an appearance that was anything but warm or friendly.
You decided to come out tonight, too, I guess, Vince said.
We did indeed,
Michael corrected him. A quick glance behind Michael revealed two other males standing in proximity to him. One was tall, with ink-black hair, and the other was strikingly familiar. It only took Vince a moment to place him. After all, Coach George had been adamant about searing that face into his mind.
You're Chad, aren't you?
Vince asked. Nick jerked visibly, and Alice suddenly seemed uncomfortable.
From the rumors that were floating around, Chad had dominated every opponent he went up against except the number two rank. Even then, it hadn't really been a close fight, just a minute or so longer than the others.
"I am," Chad confirmed. "You're Vince Reynolds. The girl to your side is Alice Adair, and the boy, slowly edging his way behind you, is Nicholas Campbell."
"Wow," Vince said. "That's really impressive. How'd you do that?"
"Student directory and an eidetic memory," Chad replied, with a bored shrug.
"Awesome. Well, it was cool running into you, Michael, but we're sort of in the middle of something," Vince said, as he delicately tried to extricate his group from Michael's and go back to keeping an eye on Roy.
"Hold up there, Silver,"
Michael said, placing a hand firmly on Vince's shoulder.
"I owe you some payback for the cheap shot you pulled on me the other day."
"You mean where I used my talent against yours in a perfectly acceptable and legal way during a recorded and observed fight? Is that how you define a cheap shot?" Vince asked.
"You lured me into thinking you couldn't do anything but run, then you cracked me in the jaw. You tricked me,"
Michael said, his hand tightening its grip. "It's called strategy, and I suggest you adapt to it quickly in this school. Isn't this moot anyway, though? You won. You beat me. You proved you're the better fighter between us." Vince tried to pacify him.
"Maybe I feel like I deserve a little more payback for that crack across the jaw,"
Michael replied, flexing his impressive arms.
"Okay," Vince said simply. In a motion like flowing mercury, Vince snagged Michael's carelessly exposed arm, gripped his shoulder, and applied pressure above and below the elbow.
"If that's the case, then maybe you should keep in mind that I'm better than you when we take out any extraordinary advantages."
"Gah!"
Michael grunted as Vince intensified the pressure. He was holding Michael close so that anyone that happened to glance over might think they were still merely talking. He had come here to observe Roy under the radar. The last thing he needed was the bouncers noticing what was going on.
"I'm going to have to ask you to release him," Chad said, as he moved slowly up to Michael's side. "As you recall, those beneath the top five ranks may not challenge us, formally or otherwise."
"Wasn't really looking for a challenge. I just wanted to come out with my friends. Michael here is the one who had a problem with mutual coexistence," Vince replied.
"Noted, but you're the one who took it from verbal to physical," Chad countered. "It was a nice grab, by the way, but from the way his face is contorting, I'd say you have only a few more seconds to release it before Michael makes this situation worse and escalates things."
Vince looked at Chad and then felt the shaking in Michael's muscles. If it had been anything else, Vince might have been able to absorb Michael's energy and keep him restrained. With cold, though, that just wasn't an option. Making a snap decision, Vince released his hold and quickly took a step back. Michael wheeled around, eyes wide, and a long vein bulging noticeably on the top of his head. He shook out the arm that Vince had been holding, and then curled his hand into a fist.
"If you do this, you know there will be severe consequences, right?"
Chad asked, in his same detached tone.
"Fuck 'em,"
Michael replied tersely. Vince shifted his footing slightly, readying himself to dodge Michael's blows.
"You girls take all the fun out of being at a club, you know that?"
The voice was Roy's. He swaggered up to the tense zone that surrounded Vince and Michael.
"I mean, really? You were doing good at staying covert for a while, but taking a fighting stance? Now everybody is paying attention to you shitheads instead of me."
"Not your fight,"
Michael grunted, his eyes never wavering from Vince's waiting form.
"No, but it is my night. So now, instead of drinking and playing with my girls, I had to take time out to come make sure you morons don't go trashing the club,
Roy countered. I don't need your help, Roy, Vince said, as he measured Michael's breathing and line of sight.
I didn't come to help you. I came to help me. Now both of you, calm your asses down so I can have fun, or I'll take you out back and make sure neither of you can so much as move, let alone fight,
Roy said calmly.
I'm ranked higher than you, dipshit,
Michael spat at him.
Well then, here are two things to think about. First, you never fought me, so that ranking is arbitrary. Second, Herschel is the one on the admittance slip, so he's the one who can't be uncovered as a super. As far as any regulations are concerned, I'm nothing more than a public persona,
Roy said, a big grin spreading across his face as he took a sip of his drink.
Hold on, Nick said, jumping in from the sidelines. You're saying that you could tear this club down around us and they couldn't touch Herschel for exposing his identity?
You're a touch smarter than those glasses make you look,
Roy answered.
Now then, girls, what do we do? Do both of you walk away right now, or do I beat you both like red-headed stepchildren?
I don't need to fight, Vince said honestly.
Michael's response took a touch longer. His eyes lingered on Vince, then glanced at Roy, and finally took in all of the people who were casting sidelong glances at him in the area around them. Vince was better than him without abilities, and if he used them, he'd be exposed. He took a long breath and lowered his arms.
Another time, Vince, Michael said, before turning and walking back in the direction of the entrance.
The tall, dark-haired boy accompanied him. Chad, however, lingered for a moment.
Nice job, Roy, Chad said. It would have been problematic to deal with the fallout from that. And as for you, Mr. Reynolds, it would be wise to remember your place at this school.
What's that supposed to mean? Vince asked, his voice still a hair on edge from the almost confrontation.
It means you are weak. You have no right to things such as pride and aggression when dealing with those more powerful than you. You would be better served to bow your head and avoid conflict,
Chad explained.
That's not really my strong point, Vince shot back.
If it were, I wouldn't have needed to tell you that, now would I? Think about it, because the next time Michael catches up to you, he will likely be smart enough to do it without a crowd present,
Chad said. He turned and moved to catch up with the other two, sliding easily through the crowd at an oddly brisk speed.
What a cock, Roy said simply. Anyway, that was fun, but time to go tell my prospects for the night about how I stopped a bar fight. Later, bitches.
Wait, Vince said. Thank you for keeping Michael and me out of trouble.
Don't thank me,
Roy said, in a more serious tone than he had shown all night.
I wasn't lying. I only came over because your little show was distracting my girls. If it hadn't had a direct impact on me, I would have watched him beat you right off your high horse and never lifted a finger. We share a dorm, but we're not friends. Remember that.
Roy turned away from them and began heading back to the dance floor.
I don't know about you two, Nick said as Roy walked further from them. But personally, I'm seriously beginning to think that he might not be the best candidate for our BFF for Life Club. Just me talking out loud, though. Totally open to other opinions.
Shut up, Nick, Vince and Alice said in unison.
26.
Good afternoon, class. I trust everyone had a fun weekend,
Dean Blaine said as he breezed into the classroom.
It was Tuesday, and all of the freshmen were gathered in his lecture hall for their first real session of Ethics of Heroism. Well, almost all of them. As Nick did his customary sweep of the room, he noticed three of the seats now stood out as empty. There had been two students in Monday's gym who had broken down crying, and one who had simply collapsed. As he stared at the cheap plastic chairs left vacant, the fact that there was no possibility these two things weren't related gnawed at the back of his mind. In fact, what were the odds that this lecture hall would have had precisely the correct number of seats for this class size? Nick realized these empty seats were meant to be noticed, meant to remind them that some of the class hadn't been able to cut it. And if they were using a method like this, then it could only mean they expected many more chairs to be ownerless before the year was through.
Now then, I'm sure some of you are wondering how we will be discussing such a complicated and tangled topic as ethics and how it pertains to supers. We're going to start by defining who supers are, and that, my students, begins with an understanding of where they come from. Can anyone tell me who the first officially documented super was, and in what year they revealed themselves?
Several hands shot up, and Dean Blaine pointed to a boy in the front.
Mr. DeSoto, please enlighten us.
The first documented super was Captain Starlight, a former World War II pilot who approached the government about working with people like him, the so-called extraordinary individuals that would eventually be known as supers. This took place in 1957 and was caused by Captain Starlight's frustration with returning to civilian life after having achieved a sense of purpose defending his country during the war,
the boy in front said. Nick realized with a start that it was the other guy they had dealt with on Friday, Shane DeSoto. His voice hadn't sounded familiar, but then again, Shane hadn't spoken once the entire night.
You're close, Shane. Speculations about motivations aside, it was indeed Captain Starlight who approached the government, but that took place in 1959,
Dean Blaine corrected.
Actually, the government officially announced that the meeting took place then, but it really happened 2 years prior. It took 2 years of testing, trials, and Captain Starlight bringing in other supers for them to see before the politicians were able to accept that there were such things as supers. They changed the date because they felt taking 2 years to confirm things that could plainly be seen might read as incompetence to the voters.
Shane corrected right back.
An interesting hypothesis, Dean Blaine said. May I ask where you heard this theory?
My grandfather told me, Shane replied.
Wise as I'm sure your grandfather is, I'd wager he wasn't necessarily privy to every detail of Captain Starlight's life and rise to fame,
Dean Blaine said.
Would you now?
Shane said simply, crossing his arms.
Thank you, Shane. Let's move on. Now, can anyone tell me what important events came about as a result of Captain Starlight's revelation to the government?
Dean Blaine asked. This time, he pointed a hand in the air that was familiar to Nick.
Because of Captain Starlight's brave actions revealing the existence of supers, the government made the rest of the country aware of them, setting up special laws to protect aspects of their lives, and ultimately setting up the Hero Certification Program, so that supers who had undergone proper training and qualification would be able to protect our country without being held liable for incidental damages caused in the process,
Alice said rapidly.
Very nice, Miss Adair, Dean Blaine complimented. Those are all correct, though there were, of course, many more ramifications to Captain Starlight's revelation than that, but we will get into those at a later date. For now, we know that Captain Starlight was the first officially documented super. Does that mean he was the first in existence? Please tell us, Mr. Campbell.
No, Nick responded immediately.
The dean had been scanning his eyes across the class during the discussion thus far. Nick had noticed those eyes hesitate for an instant on him seconds before the question came, so he had been ready for it. Nick noted that he needed to look just a dash more interested in discussions. The goal was to draw no attention,
either from being too observant or too apathetic. Clearly, he had fumbled and fallen below the acceptable apathy line.
"How do you know that?"
Dean Blaine continued pressing.
"I don't," Nick said honestly. "But nobody does. Since there are no records, we can't really say for certain one way or the other if Captain Starlight was the first super. The popular consensus leans toward the negative, though."
"Correct, Mr. Campbell. Without documentation, no one can prove or disprove the existence of previous supers," Dean Blaine said. "Of course, the odds of an entire genetic offshoot beginning with one man and then continuing to appear at a steady rate for half a century afterwards are ludicrously low. This means that, most likely, Captain Starlight was nowhere near the first. Again, though, we don't know. And this lack of knowledge has led to many controversies and theories. Who can name one?"
Dean Blaine pointed to a young man wearing glasses in the front row.
"My mom used to say that the stories of the Greek gods were really about supers. People just didn't know it then."
"A popular theory indeed," Dean Blaine said. "And this led to one of the greatest controversies that our existence has caused in this century. Who would like to venture a guess on what that was? Mr. Reynolds, give it a go."
"Religion," Vince said awkwardly. It was an interesting paradox that Vince could be so self-assured and insecure simultaneously. Nick already had a few ideas at how that tendency could work in his own favor, though.
"Please elaborate," Dean Blaine told him.
"People pretty much all agreed that the Greek gods were just supers in disguise, so it was only a matter of time until they began speculating about whether other iconic figures from the past had really just been people with powers. The most obvious ones were all those tied to magical events. Prophets, saviors, warriors of their lord. Everything was thrown into even more speculation than it had been," Vince explained.
"Very good, Mr. Reynolds," Dean Blaine said. "The addition of supers to our world meant the opening of new possibilities. Events that had been mentioned in religious texts could now be challenged not only on historical accuracy, but also the possibility that if they had occurred, then perhaps it wasn't a divine hand that had guided them. The truly devout had to defend their faith on a whole other level, and it was not well received. Now then, we know who the first super was. Can anyone tell me the name of the first documented powered?"
"Who cares?" yelled out the braided blonde from the back. The rest of the class laughed and echoed sentiment.
"I'd wager the powered's care," Dean Blaine said seriously.
"Yeah, but they don't count. I mean, this is a class about heroism and supers, not malfunctioning humans. Why would we need to know anything about the first of a thousand gears to break?"
the girl shot back.
"You wouldn't," Dean Blaine said, "unless you were the one trying to put the machine those gears had supported back together. I want you to think about that, because powers will be coming up over the course of this class. Their history and ours are more closely intertwined than you all might realize. Still, since no one seems to be informed enough to discuss their origins today, we can skip ahead to how Captain Starlight helped create special criminal classifications for supers gone awry."
Nick cursed under his breath. Dean Blaine's eyes had hesitated on him again when he mentioned powers. Of course the dean of the college would know about him and the others, but little ticks like that would give them away if anyone ever suspected. Nick took a deep breath. No one had any reason to think they were any different from every other super in attendance. He just had to keep it that way. 27. Roy was acclimating well to Jim. After the first day of trying, Herschel had wimped out and left the physical exertion to his bigger, stronger, better half. Herschel handled the ethics class and then made the change before even setting foot in front of the coaches, all of which suited Roy just fine.
Herschel got to sit through the boring stuff, while Roy was free to show all these pansies what a real super could do. Roy lapped the majority of the freshman boys once again as he breezed past them on the track. While every day was sprinkled with different exercises, running was a constant. It seemed that whatever curriculum Coach George had in mind factored heavily on cardio and endurance. For most of the class, it was a grueling, daily struggle just to keep up and not give in. For Roy, and a few other notable adversaries, it was a time to get in a light jog and simmer in the envy of others. On that note, Roy noticed Vince giving him a dirty look as he breezed by. Vince had been cold to him since that night in the club. It probably hadn't helped matters that Roy had shaken his dorm mates off and left Herschel alone to wake up in a downtown alleyway. Normally, he and his fat, body-based roommate shared a more cordial relationship, but Roy had felt the need to make a point. A little fallout from cohabitant didn't even qualify as a blip on Roy's radar. The idiot in sunglasses had been just as chatty since that night, and of course Alice was practically drooling every time he walked in a room, so that made Vince the only one with an open grudge against him. It was possible Mary didn't like him either, but she seemed to always avoid him, so who could tell? Besides, that one was off limits. He could push Fatty around a lot, but slipping the sausage to a chick he liked would be like declaring open war. Roy felt that would cut into a lot of his time and fun, so it was easier to give the chubby dipshit a little bit of accommodation.
"Time!" Coach George yelled from across the gym. "Line up!"
The boys and girls filtered from their opposite sides of the track to the center of the gym, where George and Persephone stood waiting. The rule of staying on opposite sides had stayed in effect since day one, and though lapping was permitted, falling behind was never tolerated. So far, every student who had fallen back into the other sex's group had been taken out and not seen again. It seemed they were playing hardball. Roy was almost entertained.
"Well," Coach George said, once they had fallen into line, "it seems you survived another day. I'm a touch surprised. I was sure we'd be kicking another couple of you out today."
Panicked looks fleetingly leapt across the faces of some of the slower students. Personally, Roy felt it was warranted. Even Fatty had kept up with his group for one day. If he could do it, then the only excuse for failing was laziness.
"I was wrong," Coach George continued. "If I were you, I'd savor those words, because you won't be hearing them very often. I'm a man, though, and I'll own up to my mistakes. I was wrong, and today every one of you managed to keep up and stay in the program. So the question I find myself asking is this: are you all just that much better than I thought? Or are you all so weak and worthless that it's impossible to tell which piece of shit has sunk to the bottom of the toilet?"
No one said anything. The weaker students were struck dumb with fear, and the stronger ones were arrogantly self-assured that this conversation wasn't for them.
"I think it might be the latter," Coach George said. "So I want you all to think about something. There are only so many spots for advancement out of this year into the next. Just passing isn't enough. We're only taking the best. Next time you're slowing down to stay with your group, instead of driving harder to leave them behind and knock some slow shit out of the running, I want you to think about that. Think real hard about whether you want to be a nice guy who helps everyone squeak by with mediocrity, or if you want to be a hero. Because I promise you, a mediocre hero is just a corpse that's a week behind schedule. Get out of my sight!"
The line broke, and students began moving quickly toward the showers. Roy began swaggering, but felt a firm hand grip him on the shoulder.
"Daniels," Coach George said, "I think you and I need to talk for a minute."
"Sure, Coach," Roy said with his patented smile flashing. "Want me to run faster and drive a few more people out of the running?"
"Actually, Daniels, I'd like you to take note of something," Coach George said.
"What's that?"
Roy asked.
"In this class, there are several students with physical gifts well-suited to endurance or running. Yet you lap the other groups more times than anyone else,"
Coach George explained.
"Why do you think that is?"
"I guess I just want it more," Roy replied, chuckling at his own wit.
"Try again, jackass. It's because everyone else is taking this time and training seriously. Miss Foster alone could have passed everyone several thousand times during that run. But she didn't, because she was running without using her abilities as much as possible,"
Coach George said.
"Sounds pretty dumb to me," Roy replied. "I mean, if she's that good at running, then why practice it so much?"
"Because she wants to get stronger. As does Mr. Taylor, who shares your limitless endurance, yet maintained a constant pace during today's run,"
Coach George said, without an inkling of a smile in his eyes.
"You just told everyone to work harder in order to knock each other out. Now you're getting on my ass for doing well and applauding others for sandbagging it,"
Roy said, shaking Coach George's hand loose. The gym had emptied entirely by this point. Only the two of them left in its large interior.
"I'm getting on your ass because you accomplished nothing today, or yesterday, or really any day except the one where you came in human form. This is training, Daniels. It's designed to make you stronger, better, and more able to endure the toll that being a hero will put on you. This is the foundation of being a hero, and you're pissing it away,"
Coach George said.
"Thanks for the lecture," Roy shot back. "But in case you forgot, I'm in the top five of this hard-working class. And I would have been number one if I hadn't fought that stupid psychic guy."
"No, you wouldn't have,"
Coach George said simply.
"You're the weakest of the strong, Daniels. And if you don't start putting in the effort, you won't even hold on to that title for more than a year."
"Okay, how am I supposed to do that then? I don't get tired, I don't get sore, I don't even get short of breath,"
Roy countered.
"I'm super strong, super durable, and have super endurance. Now please, tell me how to get any benefit out of lifting a few weights and jogging around a track."
"Sorry, Daniels," Coach George said with a shake of his head. "That's not my job. Heroes are supposed to be creative and show ingenuity. If I were you, I'd get cracking on that before the rest of the class leaves you behind."
Roy scoffed. It hadn't even been a week yet.
"Time flies, Daniels,"
Coach George said as he turned and headed toward the exit.
"And at this level, so will the progress of your competition."
28. As the days turned into weeks, Vince noticed a funny thing. He was getting used to his new life at Lander. He was slowly growing accustomed to sleeping in the same bed, under the same roof, every night. He was growing tolerant of Nick's flapping gums and Roy's douchebag demeanor. His body was even beginning to get used to the 5 times a week workouts from hell. It was strange, but each day that passed found him more comfortable with his life here. He was beginning to feel like he might finally have a shred of normalcy in life, with his powers under control and his wandering suspended. On the day he truly became certain of this, he reached an important decision.
"Sasha, would you like to go out with me tonight?" Vince asked stiffly. It wasn't that he wasn't comfortable around his speedy friend, but the life he'd had before Lander had hardly equipped him with much experience in the realm of a social life. This deficiency was one of the reasons he was determined to stop dallying and make up for lost time.
"Sure,"
Sasha replied offhandedly. The two were eating breakfast on this Friday morning, as was their routine, so she sipped her orange juice before continuing.
I think Julia is going out tonight, and the other two never stay in on a Friday, so we can hang out and watch a movie.
Yes. Well, that does sound fun, Vince fumbled. But, you see, I meant, would you join me tonight in a romantic capacity? As in a date?
Yeah, I know, Sasha said. Took you long enough. Why do you think I invited you to come watch a movie in my empty dorm?
Oh, Vince said. Then realization dawned.
Oh, I was thinking something a bit more traditional for our first date.
You got a car? Sasha interrupted.
No, Vince admitted.
Me neither. And while I can get anywhere in town in under 10 seconds, it sort of takes the fun out of it if you can't join me, Sasha pointed out. So our options are a romantic, candlelit dinner in the dining hall or watching a movie.
How's 7 work for you? Vince asked.
Better make it 7:30.
We do still have to grab a shitty dinner here, after all, Sasha said.
Point well made, Vince agreed.
I still can't believe you finally grew a pair, Nick commented, as he reclined on the couch in the boys' lounge and flipped through the television stations.
I always had a pair, Vince said defensively. I was just getting settled into my new surroundings. What do you think?
You look dumb, Nick replied, barely glancing at Vince's outfit.
How is a button-down shirt and slacks considered dumb? Vince asked.
It's not, if you're going on a job interview. For going to a dorm to watch a movie, though? Little dumb, Nick replied.
I think it looks nice,
Herschel chimed in softly. Vince stood in the lounge area with his open bedroom door behind him. Nick and Herschel were sitting on the couch, killing time and offering him advice on what outfit to wear. Inside Vince's room loomed an ever-rising stack of rejected combinations. In all the years Vince was a wanderer, he had never needed to worry about fashion. After 30 minutes of trying on clothes, he was beginning to suspect that he should have relished that time a touch more than he had.
No, Nick's right, Vince said. This is too formal. I'll try again.
Vince turned around and went back into his room, shutting the door while he changed.
Nick, Herschel said shyly, not that I don't appreciate him wanting our input, but why isn't he asking the girls what he should wear on a date? You know, since it's a girl he's trying to impress and all.
Because, my dear boy, he's an idiot. Plus, I may have convinced him I'm something of a fashion expert, Nick said, not quite hiding the chuckle in his voice.
That's mean. You shouldn't trick him like that. He seems to really be into this girl,
Herschel said. Nick cocked an eyebrow and stared at Herschel. Of course, as far as Herschel could tell, Nick had simply put his eyebrow up and pointed his sunglasses right at him, but the general effect was still the same. Sort of.
I don't remember saying I tricked him at any point in that statement.
So, wait, you really are a fashion expert?
Herschel asked, confused.
I feel like my wardrobe answers that question all on its own, Nick replied.
At that moment, Nick was wearing carpenter's pants and a green tank top. Not knowing what to say, Herschel did the next best thing. He changed the subject.
If you have time tonight, do me a favor, Herschel said. When you see Roy, please tell him he has to stop skipping gym. He's missed 3 classes already in the past few weeks, and we only get 4 per semester. I don't want to get drummed out just because my alter ego is throwing a hissy fit.
He has seemed a bit more on edge, Nick agreed. I mean, even when he comes to class, he always looks a bit pissed. That first week he was pretty cheerful when he was lapping us in typical asshole form. What happened?
Herschel let out a sigh. Coach George called him out on not trying and told him if he doesn't work harder, the other supers will leave him behind.
And he felt the appropriate response was to change nothing except his consistent attendance?
Nick asked.
He doesn't like it when people imply there might be others stronger than he is, and he handles it like a child.